Henry Ford Community College is a great way to get a valuable education at a lower cost. Visit hfcc.edu and compare for yourself. You'll see that the cost of 60 credit hours at Eastern Michigan University is $10,000 higher than the cost of 60 credit hours at Henry Ford Community College. It's $12,000 higher at Oakland University and $17,000 higher at University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. Remember, we offer a four-year tuition freeze guarantee, which assures you that today's tuition rates will be frozen for students who graduate from HFCC within 4 years. Henry Ford Community College is located near the corners of Ford and Evergreen Roads. Visit hfcc.edu for more details. The choice is clear. Henry Ford Community College, your best choice, guaranteed.
I know what you're going through.
I've been there.
Nobody else I know has been there.
It's not easy being a veteran.
Coming back from Iraq or Afghanistan, I had been so excited to come home.
But it's harder than I thought.
Not everyone understands that.
Things at home may be as you left them.
But you don't feel the same.
Join us at communityofveterans.org
and connect to others who are going through the same thing.
Because no one knows what it's like to come back unless they were there.
Brought to you by Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Good afternoon, this is WHFR Dearborn, and you're listening to the show called Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway, and today my special guest is Lynn Klassen, and she is a certified professional face reader and author. Good afternoon, Lynn. How are you?
I'm great, Mike. How are you today?
Very good. And first, before we start, I want to thank you in advance. I know you have agreed to be a speaker at our upcoming Holistic Fair, the Festival of Enlightenment Holistic Fair. And I want to thank you very much for doing that. I've had the pleasure of sitting in one of your classes, and it's very, very interesting. And I highly recommend the fact that you come out and hear and see Lynn. She has some fascinating information. I know you will not be disappointed. She'll be speaking at 1 o'clock at our event. And she really puts on a great presentation, like I said, a very interesting subject. So to me, that is worth the $5 admission price right off the bat. So again, keep that in mind. Lynn Klassen will be speaking at the Festival of Enlightenment Holistic Fair. And once again, be sure to hear her and check out. She's going to be a vendor there too, correct?
Yes.
Yes. Well, great. And again, thank you very much for doing that.
My pleasure. I'm looking forward to it.
Great. We're glad that you could do it. Now, I know you've been on the show before, but perhaps you could refresh our memories as to what face reading really is.
Face reading is an ancient science. It's been around over 3,000 years. It was scientifically validated to 92% accuracy in America in the 1940s. Physiognomy is the scientific name. If you Google physiognomy, you'll get mostly Chinese face reading. Western face reading, which is the modality I'm trained in, was validated by Judge Jones, Robert Whiteside, and William Burtis. They studied 1,050 people over the course of 5 years, interviewing their family, colleagues, people of that nature, and they've come up with traits that they can actually scientifically validate to 92% accuracy, and that's now called Western face reading. Mm-hmm. Your face is made up of 144 muscles and 14 bones, and each one of those have a story to tell. Each facial feature has an asset, and each one has a challenge. So it's not a matter of right or wrong, good or bad, but it's a living personality profile. And it's one of the few things that you don't need to ask anything from the person in order to retrieve that information. If you can see it, you can read it. So it's very effective in the courtroom. They use it in litigation all the time. Adoption, you know, almost any area of your life. You know, I'm currently putting a class together calling Acing the Interview for people that are going back into the workforce, knowing how to come across to the interviewer in the best way, and also how to integrate into the office.
Mm-hmm. Well, that should be pretty popular nowadays, considering there's so much unemployment in this area, correct?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And do people respond to that?
Yes, very well. Mm-hmm. That and the dating are really two of the most popular classes these days.
Mm-hmm.
The men want to save the money from, you know, the expense of dating and it going nowhere, and the women want to avoid the heartache that comes down the road. So
right.
They come for very different reasons, but they come in droves.
Right. And they all learned something, right?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So everybody's satisfied with the results?
I spoke with one woman, and we only got to the second trade, and she was in tears, and not realizing that what the opposite of her was actually her husband of 30 years I was describing. And she said, now I understand why he's that way.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, it's very healing.
Right. Well, I know you were recently profiled in the Detroit Free Press, and there was a woman that was quoted in that article, and it had to do with lips. She looks at a person's lips now.
Yes, because her name was Lori Jones, and she's a massage therapist, and she has beautiful, beautiful, voluptuous lips, which tells you, since the lips are a muscle, that she likes to talk. Therefore, our lips only represent how we like to talk and also how we like to listen. So a gentleman that had little thin, little George Bush lips really is not a fit for her, because he's not going to want to listen, nor is he going to express his feelings. So the gauge is their lips need to be about half the size of yours, or odds are it's really not going to get along very well. Like in proportion to your face, you have a large mouth. The larger the mouth,
okay,
the more
thanks.
Frequently the person talks. The larger the lips, the longer they talk. So in proportion to my face, my lips are very small. I don't talk to people at the grocery store, the 7-Eleven, the post office, but if somebody's talking about something that I'm interested in, I can out-talk the best of them.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you often, just in daily life, going to the store or whatever, do you constantly read people's faces?
No. People think I do, but I don't. You know, I've been doing this professionally almost 18 years. So unless I walk in and it's something exaggerated, I don't even pay attention. You know, there was a woman that I saw a couple years ago, and we put the traits on a scale of 1 to 10. Her mm-hmm. nostrils were an 18. You could have driven a small vehicle in. And that was like, it almost brought me dead to the, it was like, you know, and then I'm trying to close my mouth and act normal. But most of the time, no. If I'm, you know, doing something as part of my job, absolutely. If I'm at a cocktail party, since I'm single and there's an age-appropriate man, I might check out the compatibility levels. But as a general rule, I turn it off. You know, when I'm going in, if, you know, I had to have some oral surgery this year, and the dentist sent me directly to his office, and I wasn't going to see him in advance. So the minute he walked in the room, I'm starting looking like, okay, yeah, this he's got the traits that I want. He had low ears, which meant he was a perfectionist. He had close-set eyes, meant he was very detail-oriented. He had these two pads over his eyebrow, which meant he was methodical. So it's like, oh, yeah, this guy's a guy I'll treat. You know, he can treat my mouth. But in business, if I'm hiring somebody, I always look at what the odds of the compatibility will be. And obviously, like the gentleman that was my oral surgeon, I wouldn't want to live with him.
Mm-hmm.
It would be very challenging for us two to live together. But for what he was going to do for me, he was the perfect person.
Mm-hmm. So you look for that in any person you choose for any type of doctor work, anything like that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or like, you know, I have a deck of cards that I sell, and I went to this one, I was referred to a printer here in Michigan, and two out of state. The two out of state were far cheaper, but when I walked in again, the printer in Michigan, perfectionist, systems ridge across his eyebrow, very close eyes, low ears. He had several horizontal lines across the bridge of his nose, which means he's an extreme perfectionist. So even though he was charging quite a bit more, I felt that he would do the job as if it was his.
Right.
And so I continue to use him because I trust him to do the quality that I want.
Mm-hmm. So you don't always consider price. You just don't go for the less expensive choice. You just go for something that you feel is appropriate for you and mm-hmm. working with you.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. I know you had a class, too, recently. It was about poker playing.
Yes.
And how to read people's faces. How did that work?
Very, very well. I'm actually working towards putting more of that online, because what I find is the poker players don't want anyone else to know that they're taking the class.
Oh, yeah, right. Big secret.
Yeah. You know, poker players have been using body language for, you know, decades. The thing with body language is, one, you have to be looking at them at that split second of the micro gesture, and two, they're doing everything they can to hide it. The face is a living personality profile. They can't change their nostrils just because they happen to sit down to a poker game. They can't disguise the size of their mouth, the size of their jaw, or other traits that would be important in business. One of the things with poker is you realize that in most situations, we read somebody's face to honor their style. With law enforcement and with poker, it's just the opposite. You know, so like somebody dating, if a woman has high eyebrows, she needs personal space. So you want to give her that space because otherwise she's not going to be attracted to you or comfortable with you. At the poker table, though, if she has high eyebrows, all you have to do is crowd her space a little bit, move a little closer to her, and it'll throw her whole game off.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with interrogation. You know, the police, they're often looking for, okay, who of these three that we brought in simultaneously is the one that's going to break the easiest. So by going into the strongest person and saying that the weakest person is fold, they'll believe it. Where if they had reversed it and didn't recognize the jaw on the person, the other person's going to go, no way, he didn't give us up. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it depends on the field that you're using it, whether you're going to honor the person's traits or whether you're going to use them against them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know in poker, a lot of these guys wear sunglasses. They say to look at a person's eyes, but they wear these sunglasses, the big cowboy hat that hides half their face and their eyes. How do you read something like that?
Well, that's the advantage with face reading, because the minute they show up at the parking lot of the hotel, you can start reading their face.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times, some of these players, you can read them on TV if they're well-known players. The thing is that they think that they've hidden a lot, but basically, one, they've distracted themselves from the game. And also, a lot of times, depending on the glasses they've chose, it actually makes their eyebrows more readable. They're covering the eyes, but not the eyebrows. And the eyebrows often give away the person. But the thing is, they're not going to wear that baseball hat and sunglasses all the time. So when you see them at the pool table or at the pool outside or at the bar, you can read their face and you'll know how they'll play once they get to the table.
Right. So it's a study all the time.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's just like with business or anything else. You want to be studying it all the time, so when you need it, it's second nature. It's like, boom, you have the information right there, accessible. It's not, you know, you don't sit down at the poker table and then begin to try and read faces. The more you get in, you know, oftentimes men will belong in leagues, and they're playing with the same people.
Right.
So that's a decided advantage. And oftentimes, once they get familiar with it, because if it's a trait on one face, it means the same thing on every face. So if they're familiar with that person in their home league, and then they get to Vegas for some, you know, poker tournament or something, they'll see that person resembles their friend George. And so the information is there automatically. And one of the things, too, the executives like is because whether it's at the poker table or the board table, the information means the same thing, so they can use it in their personal lives, their business life, as well as the poker table.
Right. Life is a gamble, right, in business and in pleasure.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said it's 92% accurate. How was this determined?
That was determined over the 5-year study, where they interviewed their family, their neighbors, their colleagues, and whatever. And so they measured the trait on the face, and then they interviewed people to make sure that the behavior was repetitive. Oftentimes, we ourselves do not see ourselves accurately.
Mm-hmm.
I tell salespeople all the time, the best thing that you can do is have me do a personal face reading. Because we act a certain way. Genetically, when we're born, we're a blueprint of our parents. End of story. You've got your mom and your dad's traits. But then as you have life experiences, that changes who you are. Perhaps you've had a scouting master or a coach or somebody in your church or your next door neighbor or your grandparent or something, and they've influenced who you are. So you can embrace a behavior that wasn't on your face originally, and it becomes etched on your face. Those traits that you may have been born with, if you don't embrace the behavior behind it, it can actually disappear. Each muscle, each facial structure is a muscle. So it's the same thing, use it or lose it. Most Caucasian men lose their upper lip by the time they're 50 because that's verbal communications of their emotions. They may tell you how they feel about politics, stock market, something of that nature, but they don't tell you what's in their heart of hearts.
Mm-hmm.
So each facial feature has an asset and each one has a challenge. So it's not a matter of right or wrong, good or bad, but it gives you an understanding of the person and how they will function. With the scientific face reading, they studied the people, measured the traits, and then recorded their behavior through the interviews for over 5 years. If it did not come out 92% of the time, they did not include it in what they call Western face reading. So there are a lot of traits that the Chinese read that in Western face reading we don't. We know from Western brain research that your facial features outpicture the cellular level of your brain. So if you use that area of your brain, that facial feature will get larger, just like going to the gym and working out a muscle, that muscle will get larger. If you don't use it, it atrophies. Oftentimes people say, well, yeah, but our face changes as we age. What's interesting to me is that your face does not change just because you're aging chronologically. What happens is as you age, you make new choices. And based on those choices, you know, a gentleman might be working 50, 60 hours in the corporate world. Then he retires. Well, he's not talking 50 hours a week now. The lips are going to shrink. Or perhaps you've lost your partner in life. So now you're retired and you're home alone, living alone. Well, obviously, you're not going to be talking as much. The lips will atrophy. Mm-hmm. If a person is still out there and talking, you know, if they continue to talk their whole life, the lips will not atrophy. It's because we've made a new choice as we age. You know, I'm a mother and a grandmother, and you know, some of the things that were important to me years ago, it's now it's just like rolls off my back. It's like, yeah, that's life, whatever. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to bring it up the way I used to when I was younger.
Right. Well, what is the biggest difference between Eastern and Western face reading?
Eastern face reading, oftentimes there's not a correlation between the readers. I've been doing this, like I said, 18 years, and I find it extremely confusing. I tell my students, don't even go there. You know, oftentimes, too, they read moles and things like that. Well, we know that a mole on the face is not hardwired into the brain. It isn't keyed into a particular behavior pattern. So Western face reading does not include those sort of things. The Chinese are a little bit more superstitious, and each person, I think, puts a little bit more intuitiveness into it.
Okay. Well, now keeping that in mind, didn't you say, or I think I read somewhere, that if a person's angry, that I think the accuracy goes up to 98% in face reading?
Yes. What happens is on a subconscious level, we can't override it. And basically what that means is that if something happens and it's your habitual pattern, you can't consciously override it. The behavior, the fear, the anger, whatever the case may be, will pull you back into that behavior. Just like with body language, we know that, you know, sitting with your arms crossed makes you look less approachable. So even though maybe that's a comfortable stance for you, if you're going into a singles cocktail party, you'll make a conscious choice not to cross your arms. There are certain behaviors. I know that I like to talk more than most men like to listen. So I consciously make a choice on dates to talk less so that they have an opportunity to talk more. But if I was in a place where I felt fearful or angry, the brain forgets that and it goes back into that pattern. So when I'm upset, I'm going to talk more. Mm-hmm. Somebody with little George Bush lips, if they're upset, they're going to talk less. So if they're talking more, you know something's really wrong. If I'm quiet, you know something's really wrong.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to remind everybody that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. And the name of this program is Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway, and today my special guest is Lynn Klassen. She is a certified professional face reader and author. Now, one thing I want to know is, you say that as a person gets older, their faces change and they develop new traits. Now, what comes first, the trait or the change in the face?
The behavior change. Mm-hmm. Your face will reflect that change several months down the road. You know, sometimes people ask me, well, you talked about muscles and bones. What about lines and wrinkles? Well, it's like, you know, I have a little pond in my yard. And this time of year, you can walk back there and the grass crumples, the dew comes, the next morning the grass is back up, you would not know it. But if you walk that same path all summer long, it ends up threadbare. If you repeat the same, it could be squinting, frowning, laughing, you know, whatever the behavior is, it will etch itself onto your face. So the longer the line is, and the deeper it is, the more the person repeats that particular pattern. You know, you have horizontal lines radiating across your forehead, and there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And they're quite deep.
Okay.
Those are called mental development. Mm-hmm. So what that tells me is you have a curious mind. You're always studying, you're always reading, you're always taking new information, you've got that curious mind. People with those lines often, like the History Channel, Learning Channel, Discovery, Mythbusters, anything that's taking in new data, they're not likely to be reading fiction books, you know, mm-hmm. because there's no new information with that. So the longer the line is, the deeper it is, and the more of them, the more that trait is prominent. If a person had only one or two line, or they were quite faint, that means, yes, they have some interest, but it's limited.
Mm-hmm. Well, now I'm going to turn the tables on you. And when you look in the mirror and see your face, what do you see?
Well, one of the things that I see with my face is that I have a very broad jaw, and I also have a wide forehead. The width of the jaw tells you how much determination a person has, and how much, when people look at you, how much competency they perceive. When I'm reading adults, I look at the height of the eyebrow because that sets the initial contact. When I'm reading the face of a child, I start with the jaw because I want to know how much personality am I going to have to deal with this person. Mm-hmm. So the broad jaw is the look of authority. People look at you, they see you as competent, they trust you to handle situations. You always do, and it's kind of that fly by the seat of your pants sort of thing. They're the person, if you're sitting across the table at a poker table, they're the one that could be doing some good bluffing and double bluffing because they've got the confidence, and they may enjoy the game more than what important if they're winning. It's kind of like, you know, some people like the mental dialogue back and forth. The width of the forehead is about like a shelf in the library. So the wider the forehead, the broader the spectrum of interest. So the wider the forehead, you know, it means that they have a lot of things that they're interested in. So I know that the majority of my friends have broad jaws and wide foreheads. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, people with very narrow foreheads, they hear, oh, face reader, and you can see their face like, oh, okay, snake oil and, you know,
yeah,
mirrors.
Right.
And you can
who
just see them go that? Like, yeah, back yeah. off, please, you know.
Right.
So oftentimes, the people in my classes will have several traits, just like if I'm speaking to a group of entrepreneurs, they always have the broad jaw. They always have the wide forehead, and that's part of why they left the 9-to-5 arena, because they really wanted to kind of do it their way.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know in your material on your website, it says you're a born teacher, and by looking at your face, what indicates that to you?
Well, if you look at the sides of my eyes, you know, from the outer edge of my eye to the where my face turns, the skull turns, it's fairly wide. So what that tells you about me, it's also the number one trait we see in the healthcare field. Doctors, nurses, psychiatrists, physical therapists, teachers, we all have that. Because there's a part of us that love making a difference in somebody else's life. We love to give. And so there's a part of us that needs that sense of satisfaction. Writing a check to a charity doesn't cut it for us, but actually seeing somebody use something that we've learned or that they've learned from us, or you physically see that they've improved after the therapy you've given them, that's very rewarding, and that's kind of what fuels our soul.
Mm-hmm. So in essence, you're more hands-on, so to speak.
Yes, we want to see that we're making a difference in somebody's life.
Mm-hmm. So that's rewarding to you?
Extremely rewarding.
Mm-hmm. So when you give a presentation or a class and you see people getting it, that really makes your day, so to speak?
I leave high.
Mm-hmm. You really, know, the endorphins are just kicking in at that point?
Yeah, don't need any drugs or anything else. It's just sharing what I love and knowing. It's like, really, you know, I was in the corporate world when I started studying this. And I had 15 stores, and I was looking to be able to make better hires where people would stay longer and make my job a little easier.
Yeah.
By the time I was into this, just after a few months, though, I realized what a difference it would have made in my life, how I would have raised my children differently, how my marriage would have been different if I had understood then. You know, at that point in time when I left the corporate world, there was one of my store managers that my boss had told me to fire for stealing. I had hired her when she was 16, and I couldn't believe that she was stealing. So I went in, and my intention was, if I can prove to myself that there was a mishandling of funds, then okay. But if not, I'm not going to let her go. Well, I found the mistake, called home office. They said, yeah, no problem. So when I left the corporate world, I told that store manager, you know, based on what my boss's facial traits were, exactly how to behave. And I said, I want you to keep these reports next to your phone, and when Mark calls, you tell him that I'm at this point in my inventory level, my per customer count is this, that, and just give him all the things. And within 6 months of him telling me to fire her, he made her store manager of the year out of the 500 stores he was responsible for. Now, she had not changed as a person at all, but she understood what he was looking for. Mm-hmm. And gave it to him, and he thought she was absolutely brilliant.
Right. Well, you're feeding and mirroring what that person wants to hear and see, correct?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. What sparked your interest? You said that you were in the corporate world, but what really sparked your interest to keep on studying face reading?
Stress.
Stress, okay. That's a big key and big incentive right there.
I had about 165 employees, and my stores were as far north as Holland, and I mean as west as Holland and north as Midland.
Mm-hmm. What kind of business was this?
Sally Beauty Supply,
okay.
Hair supplies. So if I'm in Detroit and a store doesn't open in Holland, Michigan, there's not a lot I can do for a few hours, you know.
Right.
So it was really looking at the people, being able to manage them better, understanding who would make a good hire, who would stay, who would be likely to leave, and the personality that's needed in retail sales.
Mm-hmm. So based on that, you just thought this was a way to go, and you didn't know it was going to develop into a career for you, though, at that time.
No, at that time, when I was doing my studies, each time I would take another class, it just told me how much I could impact a person's life. And eventually it got where it was so rewarding to me, and I was good at it, that I decided to, you know, begin to leave the corporate world and branch off. And I've been doing this, like I said, almost 18 years. Mm-hmm. And it never has ceased to amaze me. Never.
Right. Well, how did you hear about it?
Actually, I started studying it through an organization called 3-in-1 Concepts. They're based out of Burbank, California. And it was one of their studies that they offered. And it really was about understanding people. And I did study with them for over 3 years, and I've been doing it ever since. And now I teach locally. It's, you know, it's a blessing to people to be able to get this information right here in Michigan.
Mm-hmm. Do you travel a lot in your job? I mean, I know you work with corporations and things like that. Do they fly you in and out to help them out?
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. And where have you gone to help some of these companies?
Well, all across the United States and into Canada. I was flown in to do a talk show in Canada because there was nobody in all of Canada that they could find that was doing this. And nowadays with the internet, I have almost as much business in Australia as I do in the United States.
Really? Why Australia?
I think because they're very open-minded people.
Mm-hmm.
And Fox TV ran some of my segments there. And that's my goal, to physically be there and teach in Australia in 2010.
Really? Yeah. So you're working on that, saving your money.
Absolutely.
Up. Mm-hmm. Well, is it going to be like you're going to stay there several weeks and do several classes?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that's a plan anyway.
I mean, absolutely.
Something you didn't, I guess, originally plan anyway.
No. Nope.
Australia, that's rather exotic. Are you going to go during the time where it's summer there, or? Because that would be our winter.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I may
now,
be
there's
blonde,
the plan right there. Yeah, yeah. You're not stupid, right? Yeah. That's okay. And I just want to remind everybody that this is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. You're listening to Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. Today, my special guest is Lynn Klassen. She is a certified professional face reader and author. Now, something that I read in your material that I thought was interesting, you can apply face reading in order to adopt a child. How would that work?
Very often, people believe because they've gotten a baby when the child was quite small, that the only influence will be their influence. Well, that's like saying, you know, you bought a used computer and they didn't clean off the hard drive and you expect it to, you know, accept your programs. Oftentimes, too, depending on what race the child is, you know, we often think, you know, think about a computer, a Windows computer opposed to a Mac. We know that they function very differently. We don't expect them to actually work together. We take each type for what they actually offer. With face reading, oftentimes, you know, a person adopts a child and they don't understand why there are certain patterns. Well, you know, that adopted child comes with the genetic blueprint or the wiring of their brain of their biological parents. End of story.
Mm-hmm.
So what they need to do is they need to understand, you know, oftentimes, you know, the Asian children have the fold over their eyes, that skin. We call that epicathic fold. What that tells you is they have a very technical base mind. They like very close, intimate relationships. So often American parents like them because they're very affectionate and cuddly, you
mm-hmm.
know. And the thing with that, too, is though that tells you they always want to know why. So, you know, the parents have to understand that until that child's brain understands why we need to pick up our toys or why we need to do this in the bathroom or something, they don't buy into the need to it. So if the parent is adopting an Asian child, they have to have the patience to explain, you know, we have to pick up our toys because we can't go to grandma's, whatever the case may be, so that the child understands. You know, one of the things is that, you know, the broad flared nostril. You know, people are adopting Afro-American babies. Well, that means they like to work independently. They like to be in charge. They like to do things their way. So by understanding that, instead of telling them they have to do it this way, you kind of create like a smorgasbord. You know, you can wear this, this, or this, whichever one you want. Now, the thing is, all the clothes that you put out are either long pants or shorts, depending on the weather, rather than letting them saying, you know, they can't choose. So just understanding little bits and pieces. Oftentimes, parents, I taught a class the other week about to parents, and the one child looks so much like her mother. And I said to her, you know, because when I do parents, they always bring pictures of the children. And I said to her, I can tell you that you have more difficulty getting along with your daughter than your husband. And her eyes perked up and she said, yeah, how do you know that? It's because she looks so much like you and he's used to dealing with you. Mm-hmm. And because he's been dealing with you for years, she's not such a stretch. Where when you deal with her, you're looking at the parts of yourself that you're not so fond of. And you're wanting to change those, you know. I said, so it's very common among parents.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know one couple, they adopted a couple children from Russia, and they did have problems with these children. And they thought it was strictly cultural, but that's not always the case?
Not always the case, no.
Mm-hmm. Could just be due to the way they look, their faces look?
Well, it's really their personality, the wiring. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, we don't buy a computer without cleaning the hard drive and expect it to function with the programs we're putting into it. And basically, that's the same thing with a foreign adoption. Mm-hmm. Once you understand their nature, then, you know, you can kind of balance it and meet it halfway. Just like if once you, you know, you get a new program and you're trying to figure out the computer, it's so frustrating. You know, 3 months later, it's automatic. Your fingers just go, you just know what's happening. Well, the same thing. If they can understand the child, they can have a much easier personality and much easier harmony between them. We normally treat people the way we want to be treated.
Mm-hmm, right.
And we assume that everyone is the same way as we are because we've been that way since we were born. If we could understand the difference, we wouldn't automatically assume that. And especially with the foster children or adopted children or half stepchildren or that sort of thing, you have to honor the genetic wiring that they were born with. Mm-hmm. And once you do that, then you've got a foundation and you can kind of read their facial features and gear them and direct them more towards more profitable behaviors, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. So the interaction between parent and child becomes easier.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Most of the time people tell me it's like, you know, the tug of war is over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like the difference between night and day, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Now, what if a person has plastic surgery and they change their nose and perhaps they take on the trait, what that nose represents, that normally they wouldn't have because they weren't born with that nose? Would their personality change?
No.
No.
Most of the time when a person has had plastic surgery, a professional face reader can always read it. The two that are the hardest to read is the rhinoplasty or the nose job and the eyelids. If they have had a good surgeon, you should not be able to read either one of those traits. But what they've done is now surgically overrode what the brain wants to do. So it doesn't change their behavior. It just changes the physical appearance. And the thing is, you know, people can have their eyelids done, but if you can see your whole eyelid when somebody's looking at you, that person's going to be very direct, very to the point. They tell it like it is, kind of shoot straight from the hip. The more skin they have covering their eyelid, the more diplomatic they're going to be. So they can have their eyelids corrected surgically, but if they don't change the behavior, they're going to have it done probably several times in life.
Mm-hmm.
Now, people will also get, you know, Botox.
Right.
And one of the things, you know, men are usually the ones that ask that because of the lips and everything. And what I tell them, I say, you know, if you see this beautiful woman, she's a size 2, but her chest has obviously been enhanced, you know, to like a 44D or something. Nature did not do that. It's too out of proportion.
Right.
So if you see somebody with thin lips, but they're blown up, nature didn't do that either. The thing in person is you're watching somebody, the Botox actually paralyzes the muscles. So now they're trying to talk, but their lips won't work quite right, and it's kind of like a jellyfish trying to talk, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So you know that they've had it done.
Right.
The same thing, if they're talking to you and there's no movement in their face, hello, You know, our muscles move and reflect right. our gestures. And so then you just know that they're trying to enhance that in some way and improve it. Most of the time, if a person like, you know, I've read this one gentleman, and he went through a windshield not once but twice.
Mm-hmm.
And he was shocked how well I could read his face. One side was more damaged than the other, but a plastic surgeon is going to try and put you back as close to your original face as possible.
Right.
It's only if somebody's trying to do, you know, if they've had 33 plastic surgeries on their face, then one, you know that they're so insecure about themselves, they don't want to show you any part of who they are.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes, too, people will date online. And they'll contact me and then, oh, you know, there's this new guy, Lena. I want you to check him out. This is his profile, you know. And, oh, he's so wonderful. So I go to the profile, look, the picture's 6 feet away. He's sitting down with sunglasses and a baseball hat. And I said, well, he didn't write this profile. I said, because if he was trying to sell himself, one, he'd be up front. I said, he's sitting down, which means he's probably a munchkin. He's got a baseball hat on and sunglasses, so he's probably older than what he's telling you he is. And she said, oh, no, he's this and that. So she met him anyway. He was so short that when he sat down in the restaurant booth, his feet didn't touch the floor.
Mm-hmm.
He was 75 instead of 60, which, you know, the sunglasses
yeah, just,
and the hat coverage.
Just a little difference there, you know.
So it's like, you know, when a person is trying to hide that much about themselves, just like with the plastic surgery, it does tell you that they're insecure about who they are.
Mm-hmm. So as a face reader, though, it would be hard to read somebody's face if they have had plastic surgery. You wouldn't get a correct read necessarily?
Most of the time you can tell that they've corrected it, so you would still be able to get an accurate read. But the nose and the eyelids are the two that are the most difficult to read.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain nationalities that are more likely going to have that kind of hawk or Roman nose. And so if rest of their face is a certain culture, then you know they've probably corrected the nose. Oftentimes, too, you can look at a person and you'll know that they've probably had an injury when they were a young child, that wasn't the nose that they were actually born with.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it may change one or two traits, but you still, there's 144 total. So there's never a time that you really can't get an accurate read about a person, even if one or two traits are not the original, the way the face looked.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the gentleman that went through the windshield twice, and yet you were still able to give him a reading?
Yes. And he was astounded. He and both his wife were both astounded how accurate it was.
Mm-hmm. So it was still, the signals were still there, but even though it was arranged differently?
Yeah, most of the time, because what the, like I said, the surgeon is going to do his best to put it back as close to the natural face as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what you're reading.
Right. What about a person that's been through a horrific fire? Maybe they've had their face destroyed, a lot of scar tissue. Can you give a face reading for that person?
No.
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 Would you have to?
Nature would not come through the scarring.
Okay.
It would be forever changed.
Right. So you would have to go back and actually look at a picture of that person before the fire or whatever to ascertain what their personality was like.
Yes.
And obviously that's going to change their personality just because it's so traumatic.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I often tell parents, you know, one of the best tools that they have are the yearly school pictures or sometimes the sports pictures where it's one season to the next. Because when you live with somebody, you don't see the subtle changes as they're happening because they're too slow. But when you look at from one semester to the next and then you see, oh my God, their lips are shrinking.
Mm-hmm.
Or wow, the two sides of their face are not as even as they once were. That's your clue then that you want to start taking action and help them correct whatever the imbalance is before it gets, you know, more rooted into the brain system.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about people that have transplants, face transplants? This is something that I've just become aware of within the last few years. It's happening more and more, but people have had gunshot wounds or whatever the case may be, and as a result, they've lost their face and they get a face transplant. Can you read that at all?
Most of the time, again, the surgeon is going to try and usually both sides of the face aren't damaged, and they're going to try and replace the second side as close as the first side.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that, again, just like we talked about the size of a woman's chest in proportion to her body, if you look at a person, this one woman walked up and hired me to do a face reading, and the first thing I said to her, do you have cheek implants? And she was like stunned, and she said, yes. Because her cheeks, you know, she had the high protruding cheekbones. They didn't match rest of her face.
Mm-hmm.
And so normally, you know, because there's your patterns, just like you have that wide forehead, that's the broad spectrum of interest. If you had a little skinny forehead with those lines, it doesn't compute. It doesn't go in together.
Right.
So the fact that she had this more of what we would call a flatter face, and then she had those high protruding chin, it didn't match.
Mm-hmm.
So then I asked her, and of course then she told me. Now, if she had said, no, I haven't had plastic surgery, then I would have had to read it as it was, and it would have been inaccurate.
Right. So again, you look for little clues that might indicate that they've had plastic surgery, and that gives you a clue as to who they really are?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Because that tells you that a part of who they are is not acceptable to them.
Right. So again, people have plastic surgery because they're just not happy with themselves and they want to change something, but it's not really them necessarily.
Right. Mm-hmm. And really what they're doing is they're changing their appearance. They're not changing who they are.
Right.
And so, you know, it'd be better if they took time to look at what the emotional issue or what it is that makes them feel unacceptable. Then they wouldn't have to spend the money on the plastic surgery.
Right. So if they really wanted to change their personality, that would take care of the situation.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and save some money in the long run.
Yes.
Because like you said, some people get so much plastic surgery, they don't even look like themselves. They look like cat people after a while because everything has been so stretched. Do you even try to give a face reading to those kind of people?
No.
No? It's no. Not even worth it?
No. Mm-hmm. It's like Mickey Rourke and Kenny Rogers and some of those people, their face doesn't even look real. It
right.
just looks like a plastic mask. I saw Sharon Stone on TV the other day, and if it had not been for her voice, I would have never known it was her. Now, her face isn't as distorted as Kenny Rogers and some of those,
right.
But I would not have known it was her.
Right.
No.
Right. Yeah, speaking of Mickey Rourke, I thought he looked perfectly fine before, but then for some reason he had to get, you know, the nose job and a few other things, I believe. So I just think it's interesting that, you know, unfortunately people just can't accept themselves as they are.
You know, years ago, people saw Jennifer Grey in the movie Dirty Dancing.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
She was baby, okay? I'm not sure who advised her, but they ought to be shot because they talked her into a nose job. What they did is they took the little bump off of her nose and gave her the kind of curved up nose. Well, you know, she hasn't worked since.
Mm-hmm.
With that little bit of a hawk nose, she could have played character roles like Angelica Houston and Cher and some of those kind of people. But they corrected her nose, but she wasn't cute enough to compete with the Katherine Heigls or the Jennifer Anistons of the world. So she actually took herself out of the marketplace. That was really poor advice on their part.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've seen cases where people have plastic surgery, and again, they look perfectly fine before, and actually after they have the plastic surgery, I think it looks worse than what they had before, but yet they seem to be happy, so I just think that's interesting that they're willing to accept it because they want change somehow.
Yes, I agree.
Mm-hmm. Now, you also use this, you mentioned before, in the corporate world, and just about any path of life you can use face reading, is that correct?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And what do you find... What response do you get from what area? Is it mostly corporate? Is it mostly personal dating, personal relationships? You know, what are people most interested in, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
It depends at their stage of life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most of the time when I'm going into the corporate world, the vast majority are married. I can't say they're happily or unhappily married, but they are married. So oftentimes, the most important thing to them is the advancement of their career and understanding their colleagues. You know, when I work for Procter & Gamble, a lot of times it's helping teams that are brought together from all different parts of the world, understanding the differences between how they function. You know, the Latin Americans have a lot more laid-back style than, you know, like, say, the Germans would be or something.
Right.
You know, if you're single and you haven't found that special person, then there's nothing more important than dating. You know, I mean, it really depends on the individual person and where they are in life. The attorneys, you know, face reading is used very heavily on the West Coast. Here in the Midwest, it's a little slower. The, you know, attorneys have quite a bit of an ego.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times they think they already know everything.
Like,
you know?
Jeffrey Feiger, perhaps.
Yes, yeah. They think they know everything. So it's a little harder for them to believe that it's true. But I tell people, if I can get in front of somebody, they'll hire me. because all of a sudden I'm able to tell them things that they have no way of knowing.
Right.
And therefore, it becomes real to them. It's not just something on a piece of paper. You know, they'll be like kind of taken back at what I can read from their face in just a few moments. And so it becomes very, very real for them. You know, with the article in the Free Press, I was contacted by a doctor in Birmingham. And she's doing come up with a process because people are ending up with vertigo and all kinds of ailments based on the fact that their eyes are not symmetrically set in their head. And they end up to the point by the time they come to her that they can't drive, they're having headaches, they can't see. And so one of the things we're going to do is put our heads together and see how we can bring this information out to people in advance so they don't have to get it to that stage before they get some correction.
Mm-hmm. Once again, you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This show is called Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. Today, my special guest is Lynn Klassen. She is a certified professional face reader and author. And one thing I wanted to mention, I noticed this in your class and some of the material that I've looked at, is when you take a picture of somebody's face and then you mirror it with their left side and their right side, sometimes it can be a completely different face. How does that affect a person?
Actually, it's probably one of the biggest effects. The right side of your body, including your face, is run by left brain, the analytical, logical, reasoning side. The left side of your face and body is run by right brain, the artistic, creative, intuitive, female side. So if I'm doing an in-depth reading, it's very common that 3, 4, maybe even 5 traits might be slightly off. One eye's higher, one ear's lower, you know, the chin may be different on the two sides, one side of the mouth is smaller. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about what we call hemispheric variation, meaning the two sides of the brain function so differently that the way it reflects on the face is different. So there will be a discrepancy between the two sides of their face. One of the things I tell parents is the sooner you recognize this, one, keep a child crawling as long as you possibly can. They start pulling themselves up on the furniture, put them back down and keep them crawling as long as you can. There will never be another time in their life where they will do as much brain integration as they do during the crawling process. Adults that have the hemispheric variation, oftentimes we put them into an exercise called cross crawl. I like to use the analogy of I-75 and 696. I-75 is open, 696 is open, but the interchange is closed. Our brain instantly thinks, oh, you know, because by the time you get off, go around, and get back on, you're so delayed. If the two sides of the face are not symmetrical, then what that tells you is that left and right brain are not passing the information back and forth easily and effortlessly. And so that time delay that it takes to retrieve or pass the information back will affect itself on the face. I recommend parents get their children into soccer. Soccer is one of the best integrations that you can do. If they're not willing to do that, then you know, piano, guitar, some of those instruments where it's requiring different things, both sides of your hands using doing something different simultaneously. Because the more the hemisphere gets out of balance, the more difficult everything will be in life. Mm-hmm. You know, if there's an extreme difference, I tell students, you need to read, you know, like if you're hiring an interior decorator and there's a difference between the two sides of the face, you need to read the left side because you're dealing with that side of their, the left side of their face, because that will be their right brain. And the right brain, of course, will be what they will be using most of the time for the artistic aspects of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I always thought that gymnastics would be a great activity for kids to learn, even if they don't pursue it, but just to get a sense of their body and how to use it. Would that be a good activity for kids?
Yeah, it could be. The thing with the brain integration is you're wanting them have to do something different simultaneously. You know, so it's like very often in gymnastics, their left and right foot is doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
With soccer, because they're having to run, and they have to, you know, they're moving their arms at the same time. They're using their head. They're using their left foot, their right foot, the whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It actually creates, I think, the best integration of all times. Obviously, though, you have to have a child that's willing to do that.
Right.
So if they're not willing to do soccer, yeah, gymnastics. But soccer would be the overall best.
Mm-hmm. Just based on your observation, or has this been proven through studies?
This is based on my observation.
Mm-hmm. Now, if a child doesn't want to change or do anything like that, how can you, as a parent, perhaps persuade that child to do something different? So maybe you want to develop a certain trait in your child can you recommend things so that hopefully that child takes on that trait that you want to develop?
What I tell parents all the time, children learn what they watch.
Mm-hmm.
You can say one thing, but they watch and they do. So if there's a, you know, if you want them to be more honest, you be more honest. You want them to be more kind, then you be more kind.
Right.
You want to, you know, do some kind of a brain integration, then you get involved with it. You know, oftentimes with children that are having some disabilities when they're young, the caregivers will actually put the child on the floor and then actually be on top of them and crawl with them, actually physically moving their hands and feet to get the pattern. It's really just like, you know, the children, as they listen to us talk, they'll pick up our mannerisms or our slangs or whatever the case may be.
Right.
Or swear words that you don't want them to blurt out, you know.
Right.
So the best thing is to integrate it with them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's interesting. I don't know if this happened to too many people, but I know it's happened to me. You reached a point where in your life, you always say as a youngster, I'm not going to be like my parents. I'm going to be hip, cool, whatever. And they're okay, but they're just not really too cool, too hip, whatever the case may be. And yet, you reached a certain point in your life where you do something or you say something and you stop in your tracks and you say, wow, that's something that my father would have done or that's something my mother would have said. Does that happen just voluntarily through life?
It's that genetic blueprint.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the core of your hard drive.
Right.
Yes. When push comes to shove, the situation's enough, that's still on the hard drive. You know, oftentimes when you're parenting, you go, oh my God, I promised myself I was never going to say that.
Yes, right, exactly.
Yeah, I told you so, you know.
Uh-huh, right. Or when I was your age,
yeah. You
know, we didn't have that. We had to do this, okay, you know. And it's an automatic turnoff to most kids when they hear that kind of stuff. It's like, yeah, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, do you suggest, though, that people, even as adults, if they crawled, would they help improve their personality or change things about themselves?
If the hemisphere, if the two sides of their face are out of balance, there's a book that you can buy online, and it's Educate for Kids, ED-U-K for Kids. And it has the cross crawl in it, where basically you're upright as if you're doing an exercise, but you're still doing that cross crawl repatterning that's very beneficial. And the thing is, when the two hemispheres, you know, if you have to look at a person, you go, oh, I don't know, is their face off? Don't worry about it. But when you look and you go, wow, then that's when you want to do it, because every single thing they do in life will be harder. Their personal relationships, their job, learning, you know, daily physical activities, everything will be harder. You know, periodically I'll work with somebody, and usually an executive of some sort, and I happen to notice that their eyes are off slightly. Rest of the face is balanced, it's just the eyes. And then I'll tell them, look, if you're playing golf or bowling or something, you need to compensate for that, because it's slightly off. It's always going to distort your perception of where the ball needs to go. So once they learn what that is and to compensate it, their whole game will improve.
Mm-hmm. So again, the crawling or cross-crawling helps them achieve that?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that's amazing. So if I wanted to improve in sports, I should start crawling around on the floor maybe or something like that?
No, actually, it's upright, but it is doing, you know, your right arm to your left foot or vice versa, your knees.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I didn't know that you could really affect that great of a change as you get older.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It just takes practice, right?
Yes.
Is that something you do?
No.
No? You don't need it?
Nope.
Okay.
My face is very, very symmetrical.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Moyer once did a program, and he said that our Olympian athletes had very balanced faces, okay? And that's why they were good athletes. No. It's just the opposite. It's because they were athletes and practicing that it would make their faces very symmetrical. The same thing, if you look at politics, almost all of our presidents across time have a very balanced, symmetrical face.
Mm-hmm.
The two that don't fit that pattern are Barack Obama and Abe Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the face, when we read faces, we measure from the hairline to the brow bone to the bottom of the nose, the bottom of the nose to the chin. And most politicians, that will be very balanced. From the hairline to the brow bone is about thinking. From the brow bone to the bottom of the nose is about dreams, goals, and ambitions. And from the bottom of the nose to the chin is about actualization and putting things into action. Barack and Abe, their face is like a triangle.
Mm-hmm.
The widest part of their face is from the hairline to the brow bone. Big, big, big time thinkers.
Right.
The middle section is the dream girl's ambition, but the jaw is the narrowest part on Barack's face, and the same with Abe. So they really needed other people to carry out what they were thinking about. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Most presidential and most candidates in politics in general, those three sections are very, very balanced. The human eye loves symmetry.
Mm-hmm.
When the face is very symmetrical, we tend to trust you automatically more. And oftentimes, like even, you know, Oprah Winfrey, her face is slightly off. So oftentimes, she prefers to be photographed from a particular angle. Governor Granholm, she always turns one side of her face. You know, and a good photographer will know if there's a difference between the two sides of the face. They'll tell you what is your, you know, most attractive or more balanced side, and then you tend to favor that. When you look at photos, very seldom is a professional photographer taking a photo of you straight on. Oftentimes when I take the photos for the personal face reading, people go, oh my God, this is like getting a mugshot, because I'm not looking for glamour. I'm looking for a straight-on shot, as clear as and close as possible, and then both profiles. But yes, it's very, very common to see the differences between a person's face, and then you kind of know, you know, it's like oftentimes I'll tell some of these executives, you know, you're a thinker. You're a visionary. Your brain can come up with things that other employees would never, ever come up with. So to pay you to take a project from begin to finish is a waste of my payroll dollar, because I'm going to have to pay you probably 10 times what I would need to pay somebody who can carry out the plan or your vision once you've created it.
Mm-hmm. So that's important to that executive then.
Well, yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely. Mm-hmm. And it's important to the company too.
Right. Now, when you're choosing a candidate for whatever office, do you look at their face and see if that's somebody that might be a good politician, that's a right fit for this particular office?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And not to get too personal, is that why you voted for Barack? Did you vote for him at all? Or?
I did, but it was because of the choice of the two candidates.
Okay. And what did John McCain have that you didn't care for?
Well, I believe John McCain is not a well man, and he had many traits on his face. One of the traits that we look for, and even Western medicine looks for, is a crease on the earlobe.
Mm-hmm.
And usually there's a faint line, and that tells you, okay, there could be cholesterol, there could be plaque, there could be blood pressure, but there's something off with the cardiovascular system. We put the lines on a scale of 1 to 10. The lines in his earlobes were a 20. I mean, he definitely had cardiovascular disease going into the office. And you see how our presidents age.
Right.
My thought was, why is this man going into this? You could see that there was yellow in his skin. That's kidney.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just feel that he would not have lived through his term. I mean, I just felt with that kind of stress, it probably wouldn't be good. But people often, you know, I usually use Barack and Michelle in my workshops because people find them interesting, you know.
Mm.
But if you look at Michelle Obama's eyebrows, her eyebrows look like the McDonald arches.
Mm-hmm.
Barack's are very, very straight. If Michelle ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. Big mood swings, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Big mood swings. And she's going to have a flair. I mean, they talk about her clothes and all that other sort of stuff. She needs to express herself. And she does. His eyebrows are very straight. He likes consistency, predictability, dependability. So people say, well, what are they doing together? Well, because he's so consistent, he's probably drawn to some of those emotional ups and downs.
Right.
And because he's so stable, you know, steady Freddy sort of thing, he helps balance her out somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like we have to be identical to each other, but we need to understand. I often use an analogy with the arch of the eyebrow, which is the underside of the eyebrow we're reading, like a roller coaster. So like one of your eyebrows is very straight on the bottom, Mike. Your other one has a little bit more arch. So your right one has a little bit arch. So your analytical, logical, reasoning side of you likes more of an up and down. You know, you'd like probably more of a mental debate and would, you know, shy away more from an emotional debate. With Michelle, the arch of her eyebrows tells you that she tends to be dramatic in almost everything. So if that was your client and you know that they have that high arching eyebrow and you see their name on the caller ID and you have straight eyebrows, don't pick up the phone. Give 10, 15 minutes and call them back.
Mm-hmm.
The roller coaster goes up, it comes down, it levels off. And if your eyebrows are straight, you want to deal with them when it levels off a little bit.
Right. So you just want to give them a little space to take a breath, step back, and then you can deal with the situation better.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Now, if people want to get a hold of you for any reason, how could they do so?
Well, they can find me on Facebook, Face Reading by Lynn, L-I-N. I'm on Facebook. Twitter, I'm Lynn Face Reader. And my website is Face Reading by Lynn. Again, it's LIN.com.
Yeah, so you're all over the place.
I'm all over the place.
Do you have a telephone number they can reach you at?
They can, 586-773-4230. And, of course, they can meet me at the Metaphysical Festival.
That's right. Get in touch with you in person. You also have a couple books, I believe, too, don't you?
Yes, I actually have several, depending on what the course is, you know, with singles, business, the Encyclopedia of Face Reading, Reading the Face of a Child, and my pride of all is my deck of cards, Face the Real Deal, mm-hmm. where it has 52 traits, full-color photo, 3x10, and then on the opposite side of the card is the definition of the trait. They're color-coded, laminated, bound with an O-ring. So my students wanted something that they could just kind of throw around
right.
and access the information very quickly. They said, we're not going to be opening our workbook, you know.
Right. So, in other words, you can hang out at the bar, have your cards with you, and if Mr. Wright or Miss Wright walks in, you'll know by looking through the cards. Take
Absolutely.
A few minutes. Well, that's very important to know. Lynn, thank you very much for doing the show. I really appreciate it. Thank you very much. And everybody, be sure to come out to the festival and hear and see Lynn. She puts on a great presentation. Again, she'll be appearing at 1 o'clock. At the Festival of Enlightenment Holistic Fair. Once again, Lynn, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Now it's time to officially announce that WHFR-FM and Metaphysically Speaking are presenting the Festival of Enlightenment Holistic Fair, taking place May 22nd from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. right here on the campus of Henry Ford Community College in the beautiful Andrew A. Mazzara Conference Center. We will be featuring only the best vendors, psychic readers, and body workers available at this festival. In addition, there will be a great free lecture series and parking as well. All of this is included with the admission price of only $5. We are really looking forward to putting on this exciting event. And be sure to mark your calendars and please join us for this very enlightening experience. Again, that's the Festival of Enlightenment Holistic Fair, Saturday, May 22nd, from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Henry Ford Community College. And we hope to see you there. Thank you very much for listening today. I'll be back next month, June 15th. Be sure to come back and listen to another edition of Metaphysically Speaking. Thank you for listening and have a great day.
Hi, this is Bill from I Fight Dragons, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn.
WHFR.FM, the station making waves. Thank you so much for joining me this afternoon. I'm your host, Jeff, and you're listening to One Chord to Another, playing new and slightly used indie rock and pop every Tuesday from 2 to 4 p.m. It's great to be here with you. I hope you had a great week. Lots of great music to get to today, but first, if there's anything that you would like to hear, I would love to hear from you. Give me a call here at the station at 313-845-9676. That's option one for the studio. Again, that number is 313-845-9676, option one for the studio. To start things off today, I've got new music from the great pop band, The Saltines. I'm going to play a few songs off their new EP, Moz, which dropped last Tuesday, the first being this one called Sunnyside Street on the station making waves, 89.3 WHFR.FM.